Like Lean, where we're all working together in a collaborative way and putting each puzzle piece together in the way that we do as individuals, we really can create amazing things like music or like feeding more people here in San Diego.
Hi, everyone. I'm Tracy O'Rourke.
I'm Elizabeth Swan.
And we are from GoLeanSixSigma.com, and you're listening to the Just in Time Cafe podcast, where we bring you fabulous apps, polls, news, books, and people so you can build your problem-solving muscles.
This episode is making me want to adopt a pet and volunteer more at the food pantry.
All in the theme of giving back, right? Those are good things.
Yeah, the food pantry is a no-brainer, but maybe we start with a cafe pet first.
Maybe a bistro kitty?
Yes!
I love that idea. What should we call her? Bahama Mama?
No, I think it's a him. I think its name is Kepler. My husband had a dream about having a cat named Kepler. So let's have it be Kepler.
Okay, sounds good.
All right, meet you.
Okay. Okay, Elizabeth, why don't you tell our listeners what's on for the day?
Well, the highlight is today's special where you interview Alicia Saki of Feeding San Diego. That's a great organization applying process improvement to help people in need. Next, we'll discuss the results of our latest poll where we get some insight about how organizations view problems. What is their perspective on problems? For our In the News segment, we'll find out what happens when an ex-military guy applies Lean Six Sigma to a pet shelter. And then for Q&A, we've got a listener who would like us to describe what are considered typical black belt projects. Our focus is on leaders using the tools of continuous improvement to help both people and pets, which is really great to see. As you say, it's a season of giving back.
It is the season of giving back and being grateful. Remember to stay tuned for this month's coupon code in order to get a discount on GoLeanSixSigma.com online training. That's how we're giving back.
Absolutely. Let's go to the poll. Hey, Tracy, this is something we deal with all the time, whether it's okay in an organization to point out that something's a problem or an issue.
It is a big issue that illuminates the existing culture really clearly. In last month's poll, we asked, how are process problems treated in your organization? And here's what we found. We have no problems. It's seen as a problem. Came in last at 4%. And so I guess the good news is that people at least aren't pretending that everything's perfect. And that typically means cultures are open to discussing problems. So that's good. Then we have, it's difficult for us to openly admit we have problems. Well, that was 22% of the vote. What came up next is we fix problems, but we don't highlight that we have them, came in at 30%. And lastly, the top vote getting 45%, problems are seen as opportunities to improve. Well, that is wonderful, because if people are still pretending they don't have problems, that would be an indicator that we have still a lot of work to do before we can do process improvement at all. Why train people on tools when their culture won't let them use the tools?
Yeah, it's a big indicator whether problems are welcomed and seen as opportunities. And usually organizations are somewhere in the middle there, like these results show. But that's a good indicator, at least with the listeners, that there's, you know, almost half see problems as opportunities.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's wonderful.
So our new poll is up and we'd love to get your input. Our question this time is, what is your favorite way to learn? It's a hot topic. And as we learn more about how our brains work, the advice keeps changing. Your options are reading a book, taking an online course, listening to lectures, learning by doing, or some combination of the above. So enter your vote and we'll discuss the results next month.
I'm Tracy O'Rourke and you're listening to the Just in Time Cafe podcast. We'd love your feedback. So please leave us a review on iTunes or our website and don't forget to subscribe. Up next, it's In the News. This is a great story, Elizabeth. I love it when seemingly disparate things like Lean Six Sigma, the military, and shelter pets come together in a good way. Tell us.
I love seeing these news stories pop up. So this one comes to us from the Savannah Morning News. It's written by William Brown III, who is CEO of the Humane Society for Greater Savannah. Their issue, or what they were dealing with, was the fact that it took 45 days to find these shelter pets what they call forever homes. I like that term. So they were looking at that's just too long for these poor little guys to be in cages. Mr. Brown's background is the U.S. Air Force, the Department of Defense, along with a position in the aerospace industry, which would seem really, really far away from an animal shelter. But he knew that the Lean Six Sigma principles that he learned about could be applied anywhere, which is such a great thing for people to see. And he also knew it had to be a team effort. So he talks about the staff was involved in this, volunteers were involved in it. The board of directors supported the effort, and you know, and I know, leadership support is key.
Absolutely.
They uncovered lots of waste. There were unbalanced workloads. They had lots of people running off to stores and unnecessary trips for supplies. But most importantly, animals were spending too long at the shelter. And he knew that measurement makes people pay attention. So he started measuring the length of the animal's stay at each stage of the process. And that measurement, and then obviously the improvements that followed, dropped the stay for the pets from an average of 45 days to just 6.6 days for each of these little animals. And they dropped operating costs by thousands.
Wow, that is awesome. I love hearing stories like that. You know, we tend to be a very pet-loving culture in America. Everybody loves their dogs. I think they love dogs more than people sometimes. But it does actually remind me of a very similar process when you think about kids who don't have homes. There's a lot of work happening in government, and this has a very strong parallel. They were really struggling too with how long kids were waiting to be placed in homes, just taking forever in terms of paperwork and bureaucracy. So it's definitely a process that reminds me of very similar setup. I will say this though, I have a dog, we have a fairly new dog, and I'm going to go ahead and jump to solution here and say, and this is a plug too. So we just recently went on vacation for 10 days and something happened with someone that was going to babysit our dog. And then we ended up having to put our dog into Run-A-Mutt. My dog loved that place. Oh my God. She didn't even want to come home. We showed up to pick her up for 10 after 10 days. She didn't want to leave. So maybe they should consider that as a part of these 6 days. Anyway, you never know. But that's wonderful work. Great job to Mr. Brown for improving that shelter service time, lead time.
Yeah. I'd steal that name too. Run-A-Mutt is hilarious. So you might want to incorporate that into your improvements. But shout out, yes, to Mr. Brown. Shout out to his staff, the volunteers at the Savannah Humane Society. Keep it up. Awesome work. I'm Elizabeth Swan, and you're listening to the Just in Time Cafe podcast. In a short while, we get to hear Tracy's interview with Alicia Saki, the Chief Operating Officer at Feeding San Diego. Next up, it's a question from one of our listeners. Hey, Tracy, this is a good question to tackle since it's one that benefits from real-world examples.
And we've got those. This month's question is, could you share examples of black belt level projects? First of all, we've got some success story webinars on our website that are black belt projects. Not all of them. Many of them are green belt level projects. The one I'm talking about is by Lily Angelosi from UCSD Medical. She actually saved $4 million on a process in medical, and it was really around waste of drugs. So very interesting process that she did. In general, you know, we get this question a lot, you know, what's really the difference? I mean, how does it become a black belt level project? And I'll talk about some criteria and then give you some examples of more black belt projects as well. But I find that black belt projects tend to be a little bit more data driven in terms of looking through data and, you know, mining through data to find root causes. You're spending more time looking through data, where Greenbelt is more walking the process and fixing the process. Although if you walked a very large cross-functional process, that could definitely be a black belt project. But I do find that you're getting more and more into the data with black belt projects. You're spending more time with data and statistical analyses and hypothesis testing. So those typically are some of the criteria that we see that would sort of qualify a project for black belt. So hopefully that will help. So I had an example where I was working with a group and they actually had sales drop off out of the system every quarter. And that wasn't really a big deal because they were so busy with trying to fill orders until they became a very large organization, like $500 million company. And now the drop-off rate was like $70 million. So they're like, maybe we need to resolve this. So we had to spend a lot of time looking at data and trying to figure out why the system was dropping it out, what were some of the root causes, and what was the data telling us. So hopefully that will help. What about you, Elizabeth? Can you think of any examples that you think might be good as black belt level projects?
Yeah, I think you nailed a lot of the criteria, the cross-functional nature of them, the complexity, the dependence upon data, the intense analysis, and usually these sort of Mongo paydays of, you know, 70 million, 4 million, like just big, big, huge issues, big, huge cross-functional issues. I remember working with Starwood, and they actually put a team of black belts on trying to understand why most of their outlets, that's the restaurants that are on site at a property, were losing money. And that really became looking at supply chain, looking at how many SKUs, you know, different food products they were using, menu items they were listing. It was very much across 800 properties, which is a lot. So really, really dependent upon black belt. So I think that level of complexity is a big driver.
Yes, absolutely. And I'll say that there are some organizations that sometimes tie a some sort of financial level. I don't say not everybody does that, but you know, like UCSD, in order to get your black belt certification there, or your certificate there, you have to, the target is saving 100,000, which, you know, sometimes people achieve far more than that.
Absolutely. Thanks for that, Tracy. It's time to announce the coupon code.
This code is for 20% off any of our Lean Six Sigma training and certification courses, white belt, yellow belt, green belt, black belt, and lean.
If you've joined us at the Just In Time Cafe, you can use coupon code 20YOGURT. We're going for low fat this time. That's 20YOGURT during checkout. Make sure to use it soon since the coupon code will expire on the 15th of December. Coming up next, it's today's special.
Yes. So Alicia is the CEO of Feeding San Diego. As you had said, it's a local food bank here in San Diego. Almost 90% of what they move is produce, right? So fruits and vegetables. And so that means they've got to have really lean processes in identifying the opportunity for food pickup, picking it up, and redistributing the produce to be eaten. Sometimes they have only a few days before this produce gets wasted and ends up going into a landfill. So they are literally removing waste from landfills with this process. And, oh, by the way, saving millions of pounds of produce. Hi, everyone. You're listening to the Just In Time Cafe. I'm Tracy O'Rourke, and joining me today is Alicia Sacke, Chief Operating Officer of Feeding San Diego. Alicia has been Feeding San Diego's longest-serving leadership team member. She joined the staff in 2010 and performs a number of key roles over the years. She now serves as the Chief Operating Officer, overseeing supply chain operations, hunger relief, programs, and marketing. A little bit about Feeding San Diego. They started in 2007. They're the lead hunger relief organization in the county, providing 25 million meals a year through partners and about 63,000 meals a week that without their speedy distribution would end up in a landfill a week or more later. Is that right, Alicia?
Yeah, that's right. Thanks, Tracy, for having me. Over 95% of the product that we get out into the community would otherwise go to waste.
What?
Yeah.
That's crazy. So that's pretty amazing. I was floored when I heard that. And then I also hear that there's still a lot more food to be saved out of these landfills as well. Is that right?
There is. Billions of food go to waste every single year here in our country. And Feeding San Diego is working to capture that food. So we have a number of different models that help us do that. We capture produce from farm fields and from broker houses to capture food that would otherwise go to waste, whether it be tilled under or simply go bad while sitting in cold storage. We capture food from retail locations throughout San Diego County, and it requires a really quick turnaround. Most of this food only has 3 days of life before it needs to get to somebody to be consumed. And then we also are partnered with Feeding America to capture food from distribution centers and capture food that hasn't been purchased by secondary markets or captured in other ways.
That's amazing. So really, your business is heavily dependent on speed, quality, and you literally are reducing waste.
Yes.
Well, that's really exciting. And I'm really happy to have found you. So I'll just say that I actually got reintroduced to Feeding San Diego because I volunteered here at your organization with my Cub Scout son. And we had an awesome experience volunteering and helping separate food. We were able to, you know, sort through bread and carrots, and we were wrapping carrots for families. And what I loved about volunteering there is that at the end, you basically said, this is what you actually were able to do. You actually developed and built carrots for 75 families. And that was very rewarding. It was very organized. I would highly recommend anybody going to volunteer in your organization because I had a great experience.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. Yeah, we had 16,000 volunteers each year who help make our work possible. So we'd love to have all your listeners come in to volunteer too.
Good. Well, I'd love to ask you a few more questions as well. And I'll also share a little bit more about Alicia. So she has been very committed to addressing environmental concerns. She's been developing more efficient distribution systems to further reduce greenhouse gas production, carbon footprints, wasted food, obviously. You're also a graduate from the University of California, San Diego, and you completed your Lean Enterprise Certificate from San Diego State University back in 2013, and you've been using lean practices to help guide Feeding San Diego's efforts to more efficiently serve San Diego. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah. My first introduction to lean really came from some wonderful volunteers that we have. Kevin Limbach, actually, who was on this show a while back, came to volunteer with TaylorMade, and they saw an opportunity to help us improve and reached out. And with San Diego State University, helped put a few of our staff through the Lean Enterprise course and really helped us to improve some key processes.
That's great. So what were some of the things that you did as part of the program and some of the projects that you worked on that you felt like made a difference at Feeding San Diego?
So I definitely drank the Kool-Aid, drink the Lean Kool-Aid. And, you know, we did some little things that made a big impact right away, including shadow boards for supplies for volunteers so that volunteers didn't have to go running around looking for where the last volunteer left a supply. We created standard work for staff and for volunteers to help ensure that we had the quality and efficiency in our processes that was standard across all that we were doing. But really the largest impact, first project that we did came from our value stream mapping activity and looking at our produce distribution. So back when I took the class, we were distributing about 6.2 million pounds of produce through our distribution center. And we were running into lots of challenges in distributing more. There was clear availability. We're so fortunate to be here in California and for there to be so much produce available to us to serve families facing hunger. And so what originally started as a project to really sub-optimize an allocation process through value stream mapping allowed us to completely come up with a new allocation system for our produce that allowed us to bring more produce in, turn it more quickly, have less waste of produce going bad while on site sitting in our cooler. That's actually allowed us to distribute over 9.7 million pounds of produce in this last year, which is actually 85% of the total product moving through our distribution center.
Wow. So you went from 6.2 to 9.7 million, did you say?
Yes.
That is amazing. So I think that was the other thing that was very striking and working and seeing the kind of business that you are in. When you think of a food bank, you think of cans and, you know, storage goods, but you guys move, you said 90% of what you move is produce and that things that are going to go bad like in 3 days.
Yeah. So 85% of what moves through our distribution center is produce. And total, actually in this fiscal year, we distributed nearly 27 million pounds of food. And half of that is through our distribution center, so inclusive of that 9.7 million. And the other half is actually through a decentralized model, picking up directly from retail locations. So rather than having the retail product come from the farthest reaches, hours away from our distribution center of our county, all the way back to our distribution center, only to go potentially all the way back to a distribution point, a church or school or community group that's actually distributing that food to people in need. We partner that distribution partner, the church, the school, the community group, directly with that retailer so that that food can go right from the retailer into the hands of people who need it in a very quick turnaround.
So you actually go to how many Starbucks a day?
For Starbucks, we partner with a number of our community partners, including Jewish Family Service and San Diego Rescue Mission, to set up small, localized routes that occur every single night. So that food that would otherwise be thrown in the trash at the end of every shift when Starbucks closes is instead getting to families who are staying at San Diego Rescue Mission's overnight women and children's shelter or Jewish Family Services safe parking lot. Instead of that food going to waste, it's getting into the hands of people who really need it.
Oh my gosh, that is awesome. I love it. So what are some of the other projects that you've been able to apply Lean to help build your capacity to do more?
So we've been really fortunate to have such great partnerships with San Diego State and with the Lean community here in San Diego. And we've started to work on projects that, you know, are a little more invisible. It's always easier to get started with Lean in a warehouse where you can see things moving and you can watch the waste happening. It's always a lot harder to start to apply those to the invisible processes like human resources, like member services or customer service. And so we've started to look at the process for bringing on new partners.
So partners being people that would like to receive food. Is that correct?
So yes, these are our partners, are the community groups, schools, faith organizations that are actually the ones distributing the food to folks facing hunger. So there are partners in the community actually getting the food to people. And so we have all sorts of processes that surround bringing those folks on board and getting them to the point where they are ready to distribute our food, making sure that they're operating a safe location and they meet all of the requirements to do so. And we're working on providing better service to those members such that they can provide the best service to the community.
Yes, I think that was one of the projects that they brought into the San Diego State Lean Enterprise course this year. And I was instructing there with Mike Osterling. Mm-hmm. And if I recall, the project was about this partnership and getting people through the process of becoming a new partner. And I want to say that the baseline was it was taking around 9 months to get someone on board. Is that right?
Yes, 9 months.
9 months. And our goal is to get it done in three?
Yes, three, which, you know, like any improvement, right? We'll make one small improvement at a time. But from 9 months that we had before someone was able to distribute food when there was clear need in their community. So there were a number of repetitive application processes that were occurring. There was a lot of back and forth, definitely quite a few instances where there wasn't a clear picture of what the standards and requirements actually are. And we had been continuing to operate under the assumption that they were standards or requirements when really maybe they were processes that had been set up in a way at the beginning, but didn't really need to keep occurring that way.
Well, I think what's amazing about nonprofit work is, I mean, you are operating on as little as possible, really, so that you can apply all your resources to your mission, mm-hmm. which is exciting. Yeah. And the fact that you have 16,000 volunteers that do the majority of the work, you have a very small group of employees. Mm-hmm. And you had mentioned the shadow boards and the standard work that you're doing with volunteers. What are some of the other things that you guys have done around
organizing these volunteers? Because that's a lot. I mean, that's, you know, I have to be honest and say that when I've volunteered in organizations before, it was a little unorganized. You know, I kind of felt like my time was being wasted because I wasn't really helping because I wasn't really sure where I could help or what I could do. So are there any things that you guys have done to specifically help that process along in terms of process improvements?
Yeah, I think, so I was actually managing volunteers at the time I went through the Lean class. And one of the things that really jumped out at me then was the idea of, you know, quick changeovers and knowing when in a process you're going to do that part. So with volunteers, we basically have this influx of people for 2 hours at a time, and we want maximum output from those folks, and we want them to enjoy their work, right? So we want to set up prior to volunteers showing up in a way that helps them to be prepared, to be productive, and really provide maximum output. So early on after the Lean class, we really focused on the structure of our shifts and our day over the course of the day, knowing that if volunteers come in at 10 o'clock, at 9, we start setting up and making sure that everything's in place, setting the standard work such that, you know, every time we set up for packing produce, we are putting X number of bags in this location. And as we change processes, we look for safety and we keep our standard work up to date to ensure consistency. And we also train leads, volunteer leads, who help and know their place in providing both a good experience for volunteers and a productive work environment.
Very nice. Cool. So you had said there's a lot more food to be saved here in San Diego. So I think I was actually very surprised to learn how much food is being wasted, just thrown into the landfill. And really, your mission is really to stop it from becoming waste, to save it, to identify it, find a place where it could be distributed and have people eat it. Mm-hmm. So what are some of the things, what are you hoping you'll achieve? How many more meals are you thinking you guys are going to be able to deliver once you start to build your capacity?
Yeah. So great question. So the need here in San Diego County, we're missing over 65 million meals here in the community. And so you mentioned that we've distributed over 25 million meals, but we've still got a ways to go. One of the funny things that does come up in a lot of the Lean classes that I've been in, when we're talking about problems, a lot of the instructors will say, well, we're not trying to solve world hunger, but we are. and so sometimes that can be a little bit of an overwhelming question, right? Because we want to do everything. But we're working to incrementally keep capturing that food that is going to waste and getting it to people in need. And so really the opportunities are starting to change and have changed as the food system has changed. So over the years, we see less dry product. We see more perishable product. We see more produce. And that does get a little bit more difficult to capture. And so our organization has really shifted from a highly centralized model, which is kind of traditional food banking of everything coming through this one location, regardless of where it came from, to working to capture smaller amounts in more locations, mm-hmm. and leveraging the fact that we also have partners in the community who are close to those areas. And so we really try to connect the dots between where the waste is, the potentially wasted food is, and the people who are able to connect that to the people in need. So reducing the trips that the food is taking, shortening that the time of the trip, shortening the distance that food travels, that's really our focus. And there's a lot of opportunity there within perishable product. Opportunity and challenge.
Yes. So when you say 65 million meals, you mean that there's that much food going to waste and you're trying to save it.
So actually, I mean that there's that many people here in our community, there's that many meals that families are missing and individuals are missing out on.
Wow.
So that's the need.
And there is plenty of food out there. It's just really a matter of widening your pipe, right? Mm-hmm. So how do we create more capacity to be able to do that?
Yes. And we do truly do everything we can to live to the creativity over capital. We have to maximize that like no other because we are a nonprofit and all of the money that possibly can go toward our mission must. And so we don't really have a lot of opportunity to, you know, solve our problems with fancy new technology or things that cost a lot of money. We really have to be creative.
Yes, definitely. Thank you for sharing what is going on at Feeding San Diego and how you guys are applying lean and process improvement. You know, it's one of these things where purpose work is what people call it, right? I mean, who can't relate to, you know, getting more people fed in the world? You know, so I really like to hear how you guys are applying it, what you guys are doing to reduce hunger in our community. And I think what's funny is, so ironically, we did have Kevin Limbaugh come and do a podcast, and he works at TaylorMade Golf, and in his spare time, he works at Feeding San Diego. Yeah. Well, since Alicia works at Feeding San Diego, you were telling me that you, in your spare time, do something else, and that is that you have a love for music, and you volunteer for the Rock and Roll Camp for Girls, which is a nonprofit focused on empowerment, building self-esteem, and helping girls find their voices through music. So, and you just got back from volunteering last week. So tell me, how did that, tell us a little bit about what you did and what it was like to volunteer there.
Yeah, that was really incredible and another really great volunteer experience and an opportunity to empower young girls ages 8 through 17 to really find their voice through music. So in 1 week, we had girls who had never touched an instrument. And in the mornings, I got to teach these young girls the keys, how to play the keys. And in the afternoon, I got to coach bands of girls, some of whom had just met each other for the first time. And at the end of the week, they wrote an original song that they wrote the music to, they wrote the lyrics to. And then at noon this past Saturday, they performed at the House of Blues in a culminating concert. And it was really incredible to get to see the change in confidence and collaboration that occurred with these girls over the course of the week. And, you know, like Lean, where we're all working together in a collaborative way and putting each puzzle piece together in the way that we do as individuals, we really can create amazing things like music or like feeding more people here in San Diego.
Wow. That is amazing. I love it. I just have a few more questions for you. One is, if someone wants to volunteer at Feeding San Diego, what would you recommend? I mean, do you guys have some standard times for volunteers to show up, or how would they get a hold of you guys?
Yeah, so on our website, people can sign up and register to volunteer. Are available, time slots are available on feedingsandiego.org, and then click on the volunteer tab and you'll find your way there. We do have volunteer shifts, including throughout the week, including after work hours from 6 to 8, Tuesday through Thursday, and then Saturday mornings, 9 to 11 and 1 to 4 in the afternoon.
And is that every week?
Every week, with very few exceptions. So please do register in advance. pretty much every week with very few exceptions.
And if they wanted to get a hold of you specifically, how would they find you? Are you on LinkedIn?
I am. I'm on LinkedIn. You can find me on the website and connect with me through email through our website as well, Alicia Sackey.
Wonderful. Well, I want to thank you so much, Alicia, for joining me at the cafe today to talk about your experiences and how you guys are applying Lean. And I want to thank our listeners for joining as well. And I can't wait to volunteer again.
Oh, we can't wait to have you. Thank you, Tracy.
Thank you. Look for my blog coming up soon, recapping AME's conference in San Diego. I attended it this week. It was a phenomenal event. I really enjoyed it. I would highly recommend an AME conference in the future if you have not gone to one of their conferences before. And join us on November 29th for Elizabeth's webinar on using improv to boost your problem-solving skills. And you know what I love about that, Elizabeth?
What?
That means problem-solving makes you laugh, and that means people are having fun. And I think people need to tie fun and problem solving a little more closely together, you know?
Yep.
Check out our latest Wonder Woman of Quality, Irene Longoria of Solar Turbines. She's a master black belt there. And we just launched a brand new membership series. It includes access to all our single modules and all of our webinars and 20% off any Lean Six Sigma certification and more. Just go to our website and click register on the top right and scroll to the Go-Getter membership. Who wouldn't want to be a go-getter? I mean, if you're a go-getter anyway, you really should be a part of this membership group.
Hear, hear. And you do not want to miss our next episode where Tracy interviews the amazing nonagenarian thought leader Edgar Schein and his son Peter to hear what they have to say about their new book, Humble Leadership.
And that is a wonderful book to read this month too, in this month of being grateful and thinking about how lucky we all are. And that means we often want to give back and we are humble. So it's been great spending time with you here at the Just in Time Cafe.
Hey, everybody, meet you back here in 2 weeks.